What's up, everyone? Taylor May here with Security VIP. I want to thank you for tuning in to another episode of our podcast series, Your Home for Nothing But the Truth. And hey, if you're passionate about sharing the unfiltered truth and want to be featured in a community that's all about it, Security VIP is your home. Our community boasts over 2,500 end users in the security industry, spanning from sectors such as retail, gaming, entertainment, education, professional sports, healthcare, government, and even more. So whether you're eager to boost your company's visibility, showcase cutting-edge technology, or you want to address key industry changes, Security VIP is the platform for you. So if you're ready to dive in, shoot us an email at info@securityvip.net, or you can connect with us on LinkedIn at SVIP. Remember, Security VIP is your home for nothing but the truth, and we look forward to featuring you in the next episode. Stay safe.
You think you know me.
Today on Security VIP, we feature the CEO of AirSight, Robert Tamara. Get ready for nothing but the truth. A place in a broken dream,
and we'll leave it all. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Security VIP podcast, your home for nothing but the truth. As always, I am your host, Taylor May. And man, you know what? This episode of what we're about to talk about, this guy lives in the great state of Texas here in the DFW Metroplex. And him and I have not met in person yet, but we've been engaging with each other, you know, the last 6-12 months, plus that probably. And I'm like, dude, this is the first opportunity for me to, number one, get to know him better. But number two, this is also the first opportunity that I'm actually featuring a drone kind of solution provider on the podcast. So his name is Robert Tabera. He's the CEO of AirSight, located here in the beautiful Metroplex of Dallas. Robert, my friend, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Oh, doing awesome, man. What a great intro. Thanks for that.
I got to amp up my guests. You know, I try my best to put you on a platform. And obviously, you know, I've grown this little podcast from my garage 5 years ago to obviously now 30 countries, man. So whatever's working, some people, I guess, like to listen to my banter, you know.
Do it.
Well, cool, dude. I appreciate you spending some time. For my listeners, we're going to talk about AirSight, kind of where you guys fit. I know everyone's freaking out about the jersey situation right now. We'll talk about that as well. But for my listeners, Robert, tell us about yourself, man, who you are and kind of what you bring to the industry.
Sure. So I've come from outside the industry. I went to school to become a dentist and decided after going through the whole scenario that this is not the right thing for me. So during that time, I was in the security business doing more distribution. And then right after that time, decided to start NowOnOne Security, which is an integrator business that we grew up to, you know, double digit millions and got some awesome accounts that we did work for. Really, the story from the drone detection AirSight started in 2019, where we had one of our Fortune 5 customers come to us and say, "Hey, what are we doing for drone detection?" Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know. And kind of researched the market and really, really liked it. I thought this is literally a third dimensional risk for any company that has an open airspace and wanted to do a major pivot. So we let go of our integration business, sold our customers, and just really focused all in since 2019. And we've been just really making folks aware that, hey, this is a big problem. You guys are doing an excellent job in two-dimensional security, perimeter security, but somebody come bypass that and drop a gun into the head of an active shooter at a stadium or drop contraband at a prison, et cetera. And, you know, while we've had that, unfortunately, some of these events happen already. There's, you know, even more stuff happening right now with New Jersey, New York, and then, you know, we're happy to go into those in details.
Well, it's interesting, man, because when drones first came out in the industry, same thing with like robotics, and robotics have been around for years. It's like, okay, this is sweet. This is cool. Then you look at it, it's like, oh my God, this is astronomically expensive. And how am I going to use it effectively? And plus, the early on days of the robots, like, as much as they were cool to look at, like IAC West, they were just like inefficient in a real world application. And then you look at drones and obviously the evolution of drones, even from like the DJIs, the Phantoms, until obviously the ones now that are carrying like LiDAR and beyond visual line of sight. I mean, those are obviously cool and effective, but The interesting thing about what you're doing at Airside is you're looking at the negative and the cons of those drones taking advantage of, businesses and individuals and doing malicious activity. And that's interesting because we speak about, and this is why I'm like having you on the episode, man, because obviously what's going on in Jersey right now, it's got a lot of people freaked out, man. So maybe you can walk us through the situation in Jersey and maybe how Airside can help give people some peace of mind out there, man.
Yep. So before we dig into that, I think you hit it right on. As far as why now? Why we're seeing more and more of those activities? And I just want to add that really what have happened in the last 10 years, two things: the technology became very easy to use, and the technology became very low cost or not expensive to buy. I remember back in the day when I went to UNT. And one of my buddies is a big hobbyist, kind of those hobbyist aircraft type of guy. And I remember he would sit down and build these models. It would take him a lot of time, a lot of effort. And because these things did not have the technology and the sensors that they have now in the DJI, it was very hard to fly. I mean, it just
Right.
was really hard. So to get so basically, if you think about it, to get into drones was or just hobbyist aircraft was something that had a higher barrier and was not super easy to do. And what have happened in the last 10 years is now with the introduction of DJI drones and a lot of the other brands out there, they made it pretty much idiot proof. You just kind of lower down these two sticks and this thing takes off, and you can program it out to go on a mission and do whatever it wants on you.
Right.
And if you just want to pause it for a second and talk to your friend, this thing will hover by itself. So that's really why now is that we're seeing more of these. It's just become anybody can go to Best Buy, go on Amazon, buy that drone, and then, unfortunately, if they have a nefarious intention, they can act on without any training. So that's really why now. It's just and give you some numbers that I always like to point to. There's around 300,000 manned aircraft in the United States: helicopters, Cessnas, big commercial airplanes. And right now, the estimated number of drones is more than 20 million. So think about that. I
Yeah.
mean, the FAA had to go from, managing 300 aircraft that, are well managed, driven by professionals that go from point A to point B, and they do all these different things. And suddenly we throw, with no notice, 20 million more aircrafts. That's how the FAA classifies them. They are an aircraft. And because it's an aircraft, you can't shoot it down. You can't interfere with its operation. But think about it from that perspective. That's just a big can of worms that we threw in their lap. And I'm a big fan of drones. I mean, drones are awesome. I have one. I play with one all the time. They're super cool to fly. You can go and check out things, can like almost operating a video game.
Right.
You can use it for transportation, for inspections. But then again, just like anything else that has good purposes to be used for, there's sometimes, people with bad intentions start using them and get
Right.
creative in launching some of these things. So I just want to say that real quick to kind of do that. But to answer your second question on the New Jersey, New York, all the drone news that we're saying, as much as I'm a drone detection company. And there's a need or a nerve to say, oh yeah, look, I told you. I personally don't think that it's an issue, and the reason I think that is because people that have bad intention, they're not going to be flying those drones that has blinking red and green lights, and then try to fly them during the night where you can see them during the night. During the
Right.
day, obviously you can't see them. I can tell you that, we have a lot of customers, and some of them are like, let's say, corrections, and they would call me or they would send an email, hey, your system missed something, and one of our officers reported that you saw this drone flying over the prison, and you guys missed it, you guys did not alert us. And what we do is we ask them, well, give us the time and the date and tell us exactly what did you see. And usually comes back with the exact time that he saw the drone or the alleged drone. But then when we go to ADS-B systems, that's the manned aircraft systems, I swear to God, almost 8 out of 10 times we'll see a small Cessna plane flying exactly where they saw coming, and they mistaken that small aircraft at night that looks the size of a drone because it's flying at maybe a couple of thousand feet instead of 400 feet as a drone. I think that's probably the majority of what's out there, maybe in the 99.99%.
Right.
With that being said, I don't know. Maybe, the military or somebody is doing something that they don't want the public to know. But I don't believe or think it's a malicious, just because of the amount of it and all the sightings. I think it's probably one of these two.
Well, I mean, the odds are like if there's 20 million plus drones now that are now in the skies, and the FAA is like, holy shit, this is a big jump from what we were used to doing the last decade plus, managing large aircrafts and jets and et cetera. It's the scope and the opportunity for nefarious activity has increased, obviously. But it's just like what I mean, what is out there though, Robert, besides what you guys are doing, is it just drone detection, or can you pick up other things with your solution when it comes to unmanned systems?
Super focused on drones,
Yeah.
and we're super focused on the commercial market. So we don't want to do military. We don't want to do any of those stuff. We want to super focus on a stadium, a university, an oil and gas refinery, a prison, a law enforcement, what they can and can't do to help mitigate that threat. But we're focused on drone detection. And what we do is we work with a bunch of vendors, amazing vendors that offer different types of detection. The problem with drone detection is very complicated, and it's a very complex problem, and it's a problem that has not matured enough from a technology perspective. So our best option to make it work for our client is basically throw a whole bunch of different types of technologies in there and say, if this one fails, this one will pick it up. If this one fails, this one will pick it up. And we use that layered approach. And we tell our customers, hey, by the way, you can buy all this, and we can still, bypass a drone detection system. I mean, if there was a secret sauce or a solution for that, you won't have the folks over in Ukraine and some of the stuff that we saw in the Middle East already happen. And systems like the Iron Dome or David Slings is unable to stop them. So this is a difficult problem to have, but we tell them there are new technology out there. Whether again it's RF detection, camera based, radar based, that can mitigate a great big portion of those and can provide great value. And we've had great success with a lot of the customers that we have. Either, one of the case studies we have is Universal Studios. They had like in the last 2 years 800 drones over their park, and they had like 300 something pilot interceptions. We have one DOC up north that so far confiscated more than $20 million in ARR. Sorry, I'm used to saying ARR. More than $20 million in contraband. They're very effective, but you have to set the expectations.
Well, you got to think like Amazon is doing obviously drone delivery, and the amount of drone deliveries they probably do daily is probably thousands, man, if not more, just on the scale. But what are the odds of those drones being manipulated, like you said, or intercepted, and then someone takes them over and they do something malicious? So it's just like this is like I feel like this is a huge problem now, and like now that you guys are here and helping solve this problem is a huge advantage. And that was my question too about the whole FFA thing and like military and government, because I feel like there's got to be some legislation got coming out ever since the Jersey debacle and what's going on over there. But there's got to be something where it's like, hey, you have to have a drone detection solution if you operate a public venue or an entertainment space, because if you're at a football game and there's a drone that drops a bomb, like you need to have something, right? I would imagine, and I think that's a great market that you guys are going after right now.
I'm already starting to see that a lot of the push on the FAA to or and FCC to provide law enforcement with more tools to help mitigate this issue. I'm also not a big, super big fan of that, because also when you start giving law enforcement jammers and things like that, then there's other consequences to that, where you've got now drones dropping over people because they got jammed and possibly causing more chaos. I think that there's got to be some things that has to change to make venues like this safer. But you also got to consider the risk of what it means and how does that get handled. I was talking to someone actually earlier this morning, and he asked me that question, like, what happens if a drone goes into a stadium? And I'm like, well, they have to have an SOP in place is exactly like what happens if somebody jumps over the fence or comes in or some sort of major event. They'll have an SOP in place to say what happens, because you can't also just start, evacuating the stadium. We know what happened with the Scott Travis concert, where people panicked and 8 people died. And
Right.
then let's say you evacuate the stadium. Well, the drone can just, zoom into the other side of the stadium, and now it's over where all the people are. So it's a big, big problem to solve. And I don't know if a lot of entities have figured out what to do yet, but getting information that we provide as part of the airside solution, as far as, where have this drone been before? Is this the same drone that we saw yesterday? Where is the pilot located, so we can go and they can go and send law enforcement to the pilot location, ask them to come to bring down the drone. What's the risk behavior of this pilot? Does he fly beyond visual line of sight? Does he fly over 400 feet? Has someone else at another stadium flagged them? So we do a lot of that analytics in the back and provide the operator with a risk factor to say, how risky is this person? And then they'll have their SOP to say, here's what we're going to do next based on this risk.
No, this is super interesting, and I feel like all I'm looking at some of the case studies you guys have on your website. University of Kentucky, Camping World Stadium. Looks like you got to do some things in Vegas. It looks like this other screenshot. But walk me through like the typical like deployment and kind of like phases of when you like go to like a university like Kentucky. Walk me through the case study there, Kentucky. Like, what's the use case with Kentucky? Obviously, open campus and higher ed. I gotta imagine anything can happen, with an open campus feel. And like, I went to Oklahoma State in college. Can't imagine a drone dropping something and doing something harmful, because obviously students are exposed, staff is exposed. So walk me through the case study there, University of Kentucky, and how you guys are deployed there.
Yeah, so the stadium is obviously their number one goal. For them specifically, their number two goal was there's a hospital, like a trauma two, not sure what the right level of the trauma hospital that's there. But there's a helicopter that keeps going in and out. So that's another concern, is that manned aircraft and unmanned aircraft intercepting. And we've seen that actually happen many, many times. And if you just Google some of the stuff, you'll see that how many close calls they've had between helicopters and drones, or even planes and drones in Vegas, where we had one drone fly over Frontier Airline and videotape the whole aircraft landing. Crazy, crazy. But that was the case study. And obviously for the campus security, dorms, et cetera. So it hits on a lot of different aspects, whether it's stadium security, a hospital security, police security or campus security, emergency management. So a lot of the universities, what they end up doing, they just kind of go into all these different departments and grabbing budget and making it happen. And what's cool about the way we approach things, we're very careful not to oversell, but to make sure we provide value. So because we have different levels of layers, we tell them, hey, why don't you just go with the lowest cost one? Test it out, see how it works, see how many drones you capture. And then they go and they do that. I'm like, oh, but and then they come back maybe 6 months later and say, oh, hey, by the way, we saw a drone that your system didn't pick it up. I'm like, yep, that's where you go to layer two. So, we wait for that thing, and they come back and say, yeah, we told you, there's radar. So
Upgrade.
that's kind of the way we deal with it. And they get buy-in, because it's a lot of money. Or I mean, any money is a lot of money. I mean, everybody has budgets, but the way it works is that you have to provide value. When that person that's really bought in is your adopter now, he's your sword is out there trying to fight for doing better campus protection. When he has data of how many drones have they captured last month, and they go in front of his boss and say, look, here's what could have been, here's what we got so far, then that helps him unlock funding for additional systems.
No, I mean, yeah, it makes sense. It always is like they always like, want to blame you when you don't catch something. And then when you actually look at the actual scope of what happened, you're like, yeah, but it's because we couldn't reach we couldn't reach that far. You don't have extended coverage over that area. It's always it's just that was my next question, man. I was like, what are you seeing as far as like adoption of AirSight with costs and factor? And do you guys go direct or through a channel? Walk me through kind of the go to market.
We started as direct, just like any company out there, because we gotta sell, we gotta hunt, we gotta eat, we gotta do what we do. I would say about a year or so ago, by beginning of 2000 or mid 2023, we launched our partner model, our partner channel. We have quite a bit of partners now, and they're out there humming. What we're doing, we're still, we still want to hit our sales goals and grow as a company. So we also have a direct channel that reaches out to clients. Basically, the way we do it is we, sell them an MSRP, and then if there's a partner around that area, we try to bring him in. Say, hey, look, you're here. This guy's your customer, or this guy, whatever. Do you want to come in? And so while we're still doing direct, we're very, very focused on growing that partner, because that's how this industry works. And I think that's what makes us different and unique in this industry, is that we really understand how the channel partner work, and we are a big fan of it.
Well, that's, I mean, you're right. I mean, I've said this countless times on the podcast, integrators and channels, they've got the bodies buried, they've got existing contracts, existing footprint. But I think the best thing for the industry, if you're a startup AI manufacturer, maybe you're new, is obviously leverage the channel, but you should always drive demand for the channel by going direct to end users. So if you go to an end user and say, hey, who are you using currently using for your security, posture, whether it's cameras or VMS or access control, and they tell you, oh, it's a JCI, it's a Convergent, it's whatever, regional, then it's like, okay, can we just piggyback on top of that existing contract? It always helps, eliminate some of the bureaucracy and the redlining when it comes to contracts, which I'm sure, you probably dealt with now with dealing with Fortune 500 companies.
Yep.
But it's good, man. So I know, it's super interesting, dude. I actually and you just told me, we were talking before we kicked this off this live, you hired Eric Stafford, who was a former colleague of mine at Recore, great guy, as well as John Roebling, who also was a former colleague of mine. So look at you, man. You're hiring some former Recore guys now on part
Exactly.
of the team.
The good folks,
Yeah, the good ones, right? That's
all the
us.
great ones.
So what is so what's next, man? I mean, we're heading to 2025. This episode will be out in 2025, but obviously goals, challenges, maybe walk me through the plans of next year. And obviously there's revenue goals, and Eric will seek to achieve those revenue goals with John. But what else is in mind for Airside as you guys grow?
We're living it and loving it. That's the best way to describe where we're excited. Very lucky to have a really good team that I'm working with, awesome folks. And with us still being where we are right now, where we are 100% employee owned, I love the fact that we can make good decisions that's good for us and good for everybody and good for the people around us. So that's one thing I'm really excited about. But 2025 is going to be another excellent year for us. We're going to grow crazy like we did in 2024, and I mean, we're helping. I mean, again, like while things like New Jersey, New York drone stuff cause a lot of news around us, we try to be transparent and tell them, here's what I think. I could be wrong. I don't know, but I'm not going to try to use that in a way to generate business. It's not the right thing to do. At the end, this is all taxpayer money, and I'm a taxpayer. I should care about other people trying to use that to grow their companies. So we try to be efficient, we try to be transparent, and part of what makes us unique that we can do that is that because we're we make our money from our subscription services, it's in our best interest for our custom for us for our customers to stay subscribed, so we can so our salespeople really recommend the right products for that environment. Not every RF system is the right system, not every radar is the right radar for that environment, but because we have that open platform, then we can be honest and true to our customers and say, hey, you don't want to buy that, you want to buy this, because this is why you're in downtown New York, get a lot of RF noise, this thing's gonna suck. Right, I've got a better solution for you. We can be that transparent with the customer. That has really helped us open up a lot of opportunities.
What has been the pushback, Robert, like with a solution like yours? I think obviously with the Jersey situation, it helps disarm folks about needing something like this or what you guys are doing. But besides something
waiting for something to happen like that and what happened in Jersey. But what's been the pushback for you, or like the maybe some like argumentative things, like, you know, why would we ever need this, or why do I need this? Or maybe they don't know that they need this, or maybe they don't know the problem. Like, what's walk me through that a little bit.
We're dealing with fantastic folk that comes from security, from law enforcement, and usually a lot of them have to believe if I don't see it, I don't hear it, it doesn't exist. So they think that I haven't seen a drone over my stadium. I haven't heard a drone fly over my stadium. I don't think we have a problem. Because they think that if a drone is flying, they're gonna see it, they're gonna hear it. And that's not the case 99% of the time. These things are so small. Yeah, you're not gonna see them, and they're flying a couple hundred feet, you're not gonna hear them. I remember I was at an NFL stadium back in 2019, one of our first pilots, and I had to beg the guy to let me come in and set up a system. And he said, okay. And I'm like, listen, it's free. And if we don't catch anything, kick me out. I'm like, all right, fine, no problem. Come in. I swear to God, 15 minutes and being at the stadium, the system goes off. Drone, it's right here. He looks at me, he goes, false alarms, huh? Right? And I'm like, it's not a false alarm. I'm sure that it's a drone. And I'm like looking exactly where the system is telling me to look. And then I see it. And I'm like, look, it's right here. Do you see it? I was like, oh, I see it now. I'm like, we've been operational for 15 minutes, right? The first week that we set up the system, we had 37 flights over the bowl, not in the parking lot, not across the street, over the bowl. And what was cool about it, 34 of them came from four pilots. Just, guys keep flying and showing his girlfriend or his friends, like, look, what can I do? So by just going out there and telling those people, stop flying drones, they were able to lower down the risk by almost 80 plus percent. So great value. And guess what? He became a customer.
Of
So
course he did.
yeah, of course.
I'll invoice
I would
you
have been a
now.
really bad salesperson if he still did not become a customer.
You know what I've learned about this industry, Robert, and I've been here now for over a decade, is obviously seeing is believing. And you know, you can talk about, oh yeah, you can show them a deck, you can show them how great the software is online, do a great presentation, but until they actually fucking see it in a real world environment, that's when it's like the aha moment, like, oh shit, I never even knew I had a problem. Oh, it really does work, you know? That's when it really clicks, which is it just blows my mind every time.
Yep.
Oh man, that's funny, dude. So as we wrap up here, man, I wanna point people in the right direction. If they want to get more information about Airsight, obviously I've got an extensive network of end users that I would be happy to refer you guys to. I know I think John might have pinged me about Six Flags a while back, so I owe him an introduction to my friends over there at Six Flags. But you know, where can people learn more about the company, man, as well as yourself?
Yeah, airside.com. That's where you can go. Just reach out to us, read some case studies. Even if you're not interested, just being us, it's really no pressure. Just wanted to show you what we have. And here's another thing too, because we have systems deployed all over the US, we might have data over your location that you might not be aware of. I mean, it's true and honest story. GSX this year, we had I'm not gonna mention the name of an oil and gas company come to our booth and said, I'm having we're having a drone problem. And I look at his name tag and I'm like, oh shit, I've been trying to get a hold of you because I saw the drones that flew over your location. He's like, no way. So we pull up the system right at GSX, and I'm like, it happened on this day at 12:30 so and so. He's like, yes, that's the one. I'm like, here it is. And again, we just got back from GSX, going through the tons of paperwork from an oil and gas, signing up an oil and gas company, but they became a customer. So reach out. We might have data over your location, and we might not. If not, we can do a pilot. Say, hey, let's put up a sensor similar to what we did with the NFL stadium that I mentioned earlier. Let's see what we got. If there's no drones, that we don't catch no drones, maybe you don't have a drone problem. And if you ever had a drone problem, you can go to your boss and tell him, hey, I did my research. I did it. And if you have a drone problem, now you have data. You can go back to the management team and tell them, we have a drone problem. We need to fix it. So reach out. There's plenty of ways that we can work together.
Well, I feel like a lot of people don't know they have a drone problem until you actually put a system like this installed. You know, just because I feel like they don't look at the sky 24/7. You know, they don't look at sensors going around their venue 24/7. But I think that's a great Great ad man that you guys are solving. And you're right, dude. I mean, the best kind of case study, the best kind of salesperson is an existing customer. You know, let them speak on your behalf to push a deal, you know. So it's cool that you guys have some well-known respected names. And I know there's only a couple on your website, but I'm sure you get a lot more. And obviously these guys that are on your website are probably great references for you for new business.
Absolutely.
Well, guys and girls, that was Robert Tabera, the CEO of Airsight. Go check him out. He's located here in DFW, like myself. Very interesting company and very cool use case. You know, if I had 1,000 drones around my house, I want to be notified of that. So definitely a great discussion with my friend Robert. And if you want more information about our podcast series, you can check us out on LinkedIn at SVIP. You can connect with us on our website at svip.news. And wherever you listen to podcasts, we are available on every single major streaming platform: Spotify, Pandora, Apple, Amazon, iHeartRadio. The list goes on. You guys stay safe out there. We will catch you guys on the next one.
Defeated and brought down.